Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 116 with Rusty May. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Rusty May, we explore a number of interesting topics like how to support the human being, not the human doing. Do you keep notes on your conversations? How to establish positive classroom environments and the I do, we do, you do philosophy. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. I know the owner and founder of School Spirit Vending. He is a personal friend and he brings hassle-free fundraising to your school. But even better, Matt has written a top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. He's given it away completely free. Get it at schoolzonepodcast.com. That's the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I am thrilled to be joined today with Rusty May, the Director of Bullying and School Safety Foundation. He's the co-author of Time in Teaching and the creator of SchoolToolsTV.com, international teacher trainer for the Center for Teacher Effectiveness. May inspires educators to connect more completely with all their students by training them to be assertive classroom managers and positive disciplinarians, which results in more teachable time, time on task, better academic outcomes, increased job satisfaction, and their students acquiring the basic behavioral skills they need to succeed in school and in life. May has conducted over 500 trainings, workshops, keynotes, and breakouts in all these ideas since 2005. Rusty, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you, Danny. It's great to be here.
So what inspired you, Rusty, to pursue this career in education?
You know, I was a military kid growing up, and we moved about every 18 months. And so the teachers and coaches that I had along the way really had a big impact on me in terms of being able to connect. Obviously, going to different schools that often, you had to make new friends, you were losing friends. There was a lot of things going on. And the teachers and coaches that I was fortunate enough to connect with really made a difference in my life. And I didn't realize it. Early on in my career, I was chasing after money and doing other kinds of things. But at the age of 40, I kind of had an epiphany and decided to go back to my roots and to the people that I was inspired by. And I went back to school, got my master's in counseling, and started my career in education.
I love that because you had this moment where you kind of pivoted and you wanted to go back to your roots, so to speak. You got your master's in counseling. And what did you find out when you entered the school sphere, right? What did you learn about, was this the right choice? Like, what did you learn about yourself? And if you wanted to reconnect, did you make that reconnection?
Yeah, definitely. But I think the biggest thing that I learned, being a school counselor, I thought at the beginning was all about going in and trying to connect with the kids, and that if I could connect with the kids, then it would really make a big difference in the school. And I think what I learned very quickly was that my main client were, in fact, the teachers, and that my job was to help the teachers connect with the kids. Because I could connect with them very well. I could have them come into my office once a week and spend 30 minutes with them talking and having fun and doing what they wanted to do. But if that didn't translate into success in the classroom or a deeper connection with their teacher, then the kid ultimately wouldn't be successful. So I think that was the big turn for me, was realizing who my main client was. And I was very excited about that. I'm much more of an adult educator. I think it's another thing I learned. I talk a lot. So it's sometimes working in elementary school, you have kids aren't quite as verbal. So adult education was more along the line of what I wanted to do. And I ended up kind of turning my career a little bit and starting with my master's thesis, and, you know, has led me for the past 14 or 15 years.
I love that perspective, because we're all in it for kids, you know, and we make everything we do about them. But I've seen school leaders, and I think it's a mistake, forget about the adults.
Yeah.
And my philosophy, like yours, I thought, hey, if I take care of the adults in this building, then they're going to take care of the kids. And I made that, you know, I tried to make that my mission.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important. And I think we forget sometimes as leaders, you know, because I think a lot of times teachers try to carry. They're so caring, and most of them are so thoughtful, and they end up carrying a lot of extra weight. And I think that we could do a better job of figuring out, whether it's in staff meetings or in just around the, you know, the staff lounge, being able to create some room and some time to listen and to support just the human, you know, the human being as opposed to the human doing, and really give them an opportunity and to understand that, hey, we know that you guys are the boots on the ground. You're the front line. And, you know, like you said, we support you, knowing that at the end of the day is going to support the education process and help the kids and everybody be more successful.
So stay with that listening piece and the idea of human beings versus human doings. How did you, or what have you observed that works effectively when you need to listen and connect with the adults in the building to figure out like how to serve them at a high level?
Yeah, I think it's similar to what we try and do with the kids. I mean, human being versus human doing, the idea is noticing and finding out what's important to the individual and not always thanking them for the work that we're asking them to do. So as a leader, whether in the classroom or in a building, we're constantly asking people to do certain things and do certain tasks. And we've become very good at thanking them for that and noticing that and being grateful for them doing things for us. But what we want to do is also just be grateful for them as a human being, and just to notice, hey, you got a haircut today, or hey, you told me you and the family were going away last weekend. How did that go? So we're constantly finding little ways to connect and little bits of conversation that are not related to the work at hand. It's just about that individual. And with, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 teachers in a building, if we can have a mental file or even a physical file, a lot of salespeople will do that. They'll keep notes about the people that they're talking to on a regular basis. And then when the next time they talk to them, they follow up on those notes. Those are very calculated and important skills that a leader can do in a school to make sure that their people know. That's what I always tell teachers. If the kids don't know that it's more about them than it is about their test scores, they're going to struggle to follow your lead in the classroom. And I think the same is true for principals in a building. The teachers need to know it's more about them than it is about their outcomes, and creating ways to make that a part of what we do is a really valuable leadership skill.
Rusty, can you tell me the story of starting School Tools TV?
Yeah, that was my master's thesis. I was finishing up, and the master's professor came in and said, you can either write a thesis or you can do a project. And I wasn't interested in writing a thesis. So they said, find a project at your school that you can take over, and you can use that as your thesis. And we had a daily video program that the school did every day, and it was, you know, like the Pledge of Allegiance and the announcements. And
right.
Each one of the classes would be responsible for a week. So the teacher would bring the kids in, and they would be the leaders of the daily in-house video show. And the teachers hated it. They didn't want to go. They didn't want to do it in the morning. They didn't like being on closed circuit television first thing in the morning for whatever reason. And I asked if I could take it over, and they said yes. And so what I did was to try and add a social skills component to everything else that we were talking about, so that we were, as a counselor, we were talking to everybody in the building about the rules and expectations and why we have them and why they're important. And so we were kind of creating a language of success in the building and figuring out ways to talk about these skills that, or the behaviors that the kids oftentimes don't, you know, they don't come naturally to them. They haven't always been taught these behaviors. So encouraging the teachers to, in fact, teach to their expectations behaviorally. And it was a big hit. And then, you know, that was in 2003, and the internet began to really take off with websites and so forth. And so we we're able to put that into a package, and now it's delivered out to about, I think depending on classroom size, we have over about 1,500 teachers and schools that watch the show every day. So we're between 20 and 30,000 kids a day are clicking in and watching a 1 minute video with their teacher talking about.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. The behavioral expectations of what they need to be doing to be successful in the classroom, which is what I wanted to do as a counselor.
And what are you most proud of, or particularly proud of, with School Tools TV and what you've accomplished over the last year?
There's been a number of different things that have happened. You know, one was a young boy who was tragically killed fell off of was hiking with his parents up in the mountains of California, and the trail collapsed and he went down. And the mother had contacted me and told me how much he loved the show, and that he used to come home every day and tell his mom about the show, and did the ending of the show for her, which is I have the same ending every day, and the kids end up memorizing it and sharing it. And it was so important to the mom that she actually had put a picture of him together. Tommy Botel is his name. I have a picture in my office, and she has the picture of him, and he's in the trees with a peace sign. It says peace out with diamonds. And she was in a moment of such unbelievable loss. She wanted to contact me and tell me how important it was to him. And, I've had five or six experiences like that over the past 13 years where kids have really connected to what I was talking about across a medium like the internet, and apparently it has an impact. And I get letters all the time, teachers constantly sending me notes and so forth, thanking me for that. So that's pretty overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine that, but pretty fulfilling too, huh?
Yeah, it's amazing. And when I get to go to the schools and do assemblies and meet the kids and stuff, they're all very excited. It's an incredible one. I've been very fortunate. I had a high school teacher, Rose Throkel, who was one of my leaders, who really impacted me. And she taught me Shakespeare. And she said, "To thine own self be true," was how she signed my yearbook. And I think School Tools TV is a big part of that.
It's amazing how we can trace those, what seem like maybe insignificant or small events that happen, but that inspire big things. I mean, you're talking to thousands and thousands of kids on a daily basis, and this teacher encouraged you, and you can trace that line all the way back. That's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Rusty, how would you describe your leadership style, and how'd you develop it?
I'd say I'm very assertive. I ask for what I want. I'm very direct. And I also teach to my expectations. I've done a lot of work in classrooms. I go into classrooms. The early part of my career was going into classrooms and teaching social skills curriculum. I've also been a basketball coach for 30 years. It's the middle school age group. And so teaching to expectations and showing what I expect is a big part of what I do. And I think I developed that style because of the military upbringing. My father, military officer. And also, again, going back to those great teachers and coaches, the ones that would tell me exactly what I needed to do to be successful really helped me, because I'm that kind of learner. If I have a blueprint, I can follow it. And if somebody is really specific about what works and what doesn't, it just kind of helps me stay the course. And I appreciate that. So I try to incorporate that into my leadership style.
Ian, thank you for your military service. What branch did you serve in?
I was just a kid, and my dad was the military guy. We grew up as he ended up retiring as a 3-star general in the Air Force. He was the assistant vice chief of staff. But we ended up, you know, spending our youth following my father around the world as he went through his career. So I never went into the military. I always say I spent 18 years in the military, and it's dishonorably discharged. But I have a younger brother who's a Marine officer, and he's been actually in combat 5 times. So he's the one that followed in my dad's footsteps. But the other 4 of us, I think we'd had enough by the time we got to college.
Gotcha. middle school basketball. I coached that as well. So that's cool. We could geek out on that for maybe 30 seconds or so. So do you run a man or zone defense?
I've always been a man-to-man guy. I've always believed that it was important to learn that. As a middle school coach, I always think that my job is to teach or to make the next coach's job easier. So what I focus a lot on are the fundamentals. And I feel like zone oftentimes with the younger kids, it's just kind of, you just end up standing around too much. And with so much three-point shooting going on now, you end up pushing the zone so far out that it ends up opening up the middle. So I tend to like to teach the basics and to get kids fundamentally sound. And I think man-to-man helps do that. We do zone sometimes. We switch it up a lot in timeouts and so forth. How about you?
Man-to-man as well, a big proponent of that. And we ran, you know, the shell drill religiously. I watched this coach at the time, Coach Weber at University of Illinois, had a pretty cool basketball tutorial DVD out. And it changed dramatically everything I did in terms of coaching defense because he assigned points to everything. He made everything a competition. And, you know, kids, probably every basketball player wants to put the ball in the hole and get the glory of making the basket. And of course, that was worth points, but it was worth 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
If you made an assist, that was worth the team's 2 points. If you got a rebound or a stop, that was worth 2 points. So the way to win our competitions was not by making the most baskets, but by being unselfish and by playing very sound defense, including, you know, getting stops and ultimately getting rebounds, right?
Yeah, was that Bruce Weber from Illinois when he was coaching there?
Correct.
Yeah, I remember that team. That's about, I think it's the last time Illinois had. I think the point guard, Deron Williams, the guy that played for Cleveland in the championship, I think he played for that team. That was, I think we got to the, did we lost in the final game? I love that Illinois team. That Bruce Weber was, that was a great year for them.
Yeah, and that was the last time we were good, you know. And when Coach left us to go to Kansas, that was really the team Bill Self groomed, right? Those were all his recruits. And I think Coach Weber benefited from those quality players. But yeah, it's been downhill from there. So it's a sad, sad thing. So what are you going to do?
Build it back up.
Yeah, hopefully. Hey, you know, I've heard you mention assertive twice, and I know that you really care about classroom management and being very clear about what you expect as a teacher. How does assertiveness play into classroom management and positive expectations?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that. I think it's one of the things that that most teachers, and I do enough work around teacher preparation programs and talk to college professors and so forth about these issues, because I do think that the young teachers who are coming out, and even the people that have been in the profession for a long period of time, have never really been given assertive management tools, and they end up oftentimes either being very aggressive in their leadership style or passive in their leadership style. And the assertiveness piece is being able to, without emotion, without taking things personally, ask for what you want, give the student a choice, and then honor that choice. And that's also plays into discipline versus punishment and a lot of the things that we're dealing with now as we begin to understand that we can no longer just simply have a zero tolerance policy or refer our kids to the principal's office or suspend them or expel them. I mean, Illinois is a great example of that. What's going on in Chicago right now, we're losing an entire generation of African or young men of color because they're just not connecting in the classroom. We're losing them early and often. And a lot of it has to do with our discipline policies. And so we're struggling to get our mind around it. We're struggling how to deal with those kinds of challenges. I live in Delaware, and Delaware is in even probably as bad a shape, if not worse, than any other state in terms of young men of color falling through the cracks and not making it through the education system. And, you know, the prisons are full, and we just don't have an option. And I think the assertiveness piece is the ability to be able to rationally and calmly deal with the challenges at hand. And those skills have to be taught, just like we have to teach the kids how to behave. Teachers do not come with a set of skills that they either can or they can't. They have certain skills. They have certain connective pieces. If they have a classroom with 30 kids in it, they'll probably connect with 25 or 26 of those kids. But it's those three or four that they don't connect with are the ones that we need to give them certain skills and certain strategies and tactics that will help them to deal with that child as well, if that makes sense.
No, it absolutely makes sense. I'm wondering if you can be specific too and offer a tip or two to our school leader listeners and those that are either running a district, a building, or an individual classroom. What are some things they can do today after listening to this podcast to establish that environment you were describing?
Well, as we're in October, so we're kind of getting into the middle, you know, what normally happens is a lot of times at the beginning of the year, teachers will spend some time talking about behavioral expectations. And then a lot of times, unless you're in kindergarten, where we still kind of have the behavior circles and we still have maybe a morning meeting or something like that where we talk about these things, as kids get older and the grades advance, oftentimes teachers by now are fully into the curriculum and they're teaching to the curriculum, and you're starting to see kids who maybe, you know, that honeymoon period has worn off. And so now you may be seeing more kids being referred to the office. You may be hearing more things from teachers about being frustrated with certain behaviors. And the key is to come back to this idea of teaching to expectation. You and I are both basketball fans. And, you know, I think you remember the great basketball coach, John Wooden at UCLA.
Oh, yes. You can talk about him all day if you want, and we could do a Coach Wooden podcast.
Well, I think you probably—I don't know if you know the story of what he made all of his players do at the beginning of practice every year.
Shoelaces.
Shoelaces. He took all their shoes and socks off and made them put their shoes and socks on in the appropriate way so that they wouldn't get blisters and running and so forth. And that's the greatest one of the greatest basketball coaches that's been around. And he started from the most basic idea and taught that all the way along. And that's what we need to encourage our teachers to do as well. If they have five or six rules or behaviors in their classroom, their expectations, they need to stop what they're doing in the morning and they need to teach to those expectations the same way Coach Wooden did. It's I do, we do, you do. And we teach the expectations by showing them what perfect looks like, having them do it for us, and then testing them on a Monday or after, but you know, we got a break coming up at Thanksgiving. When those kids come back after Thanksgiving, they're going to be a little bit rusty in the tools that they have developed. And so we need to constantly be moving every day and making sure that those kids and those teachers are being reminded what perfect looks like, and they're tested on that. They can show us that. They understand what the rationale is for that. And then we get back into the curriculum. And what you notice is that it takes a little bit of time up front. But by the time a couple of months go on and you've developed these behaviors and everybody's on the same page as to how they turn in their homework, how do they go to the bathroom, how they line up in the hallways, how they come in from recess, and all those kinds of things, we're saving so much time that a month or so down the road, we're going to be freer, doing more curriculum, moving, but you know, having better results in the classroom. And all of these things are directly related to us teaching to our behavioral expectations in the classroom.
What do you say to people that, I'll just call them, I was going to call them haters, but they just aren't, they're not converts yet. And they are skeptics because they have maybe the philosophy and perspective, well, the kids should know. They should know this already. What would you say to those folks?
I think it's the biggest misunderstanding in education today is the concept that kids should know this stuff. I mean, you know, they're taught environmentally by where they come from, and it's not always kids who come from a challenging environment. It could be kids who come from incredibly affluent environments whose parents are not, you know, holding them accountable for behavior and are not asking them to do certain things and so forth. And if you think about what the influences on these kids are today, as opposed to what they were even 10 or 15 years ago, where we had a lot of human interaction and so forth. Nowadays, you have a lot more video interaction. You have a lot more online interaction. And you just have to walk into a classroom and see what's going on and what the teachers are dealing with. And then ask yourself the question, if I take this out to the, if I just punish and continue to punish, what is the end result? What's going to happen? Punishment is about me. Discipline is about teaching the child the appropriate behavior. And if we don't think, if we don't think that their behaviors can change, and if we assume that they're coming to us hardwired with those behaviors in place, I think that's one of the problems that you're having. Then you, you know, you can simply say, okay, then I encourage you to walk into your classrooms and see what's going on and what the problems are. And then think about what you're doing and ask yourself the question, if doing the same thing over and over again and getting the same result is what you want, then so be it. But if you want to try something different, simply teach to your behavioral expectations, both for teachers and for students. And do not assume that teachers know assertive classroom management, and certainly do not assume that the students are coming hardwired knowing how to behave to be successful.
In your opinion, are there any universal classroom norms or expectations that you think every school and every teacher should adopt?
No, I think it should be incredibly individual. Like for me, for example, as a basketball coach, I have certain things that are intrinsically important to me. I don't like the kids talking when I'm talking. If they have to do something, they can talk when I'm not talking. When they're practicing, talking to each other is something that we encourage. But whatever works in the individual teacher's classroom, I think it's important that you also incorporate the children in that decision-making process. As a new parent, I have almost a 2-year-old and a 9-month-old. My wife and I talk a lot about our parenting strategies as we go forward. And what we want to be able to do is to have our children involved in that conversation so that we say, okay, here's what we think the rules should be, or why we need these kinds of rules, and let's talk about what that rule is going to look like and what the consequences are going to be for not living up to that expectation. And I think teachers can really get a lot out of having a conversation with their classroom, but also at the end, they're going to be the ones who make the rule. They're going to be the ones who enforce the rules and so forth. And so they need to think about to themselves, what are the 3 or 4 things that really bug me? What are the things that are my pet peeves? Maybe it's how someone raises their hand, or how the children turn in their homework, or how the children deal with frustration, or whatever it happens to be. And then have conversations about that, and then make it work for your classroom. As you and I both know, when it comes to coaching basketball, you can try to force every team that you have into one specific system, or you can look at your kids each year and you can say, okay, this year I've got a couple of shooters, but I'm really fast. I've got a really quick team. And in middle school, you know, speed can't be taught. If I have speed, I may decide this year we're going to do a run and gun kind of a thing because I have it. The next year I may end up with a bunch of big kids who aren't as fast, and I decide to slow it down and play a half court kind of situation. It really depends every year on the kids that you have and what's really important to you and what at the end of the day you're trying to teach them. You know, I think what the other thing you can say is, as educators, we are not really sure what the future job market is going to look like because it's changing so rapidly that we don't know the skills. And so what are the skills that you really want to give these kids? What are the things that are going to help them? At the end of the day, 20, 30, 40 years from now, I signed every one of my emails with the idea that I was basically the skills that those teachers gave me between the ages of 12 and 18 are the skills that I've used that have gotten me to where I am today. And those are the skills that I remember. Those are the skills, the resiliency, the responsibility, those kinds of what we call soft skills. I don't remember, you know, a lot of the math or the science or any of the stuff that I don't use, but those soft skills, those people skills, I use that stuff every day, and it's critical. And I, as educators, we've got to be asking ourselves, you know, what do we want? How do we want to leave these kids, especially the ones who aren't going to, you know, burn the house down with their grade, with their report card, and go on to be a superstar in STEM or whatever it happens to be? what about all the rest of us in the bell curve who aren't going to do that? You know, those are the kids that we need to reach as well at some level.
Yeah, absolutely. And you make a really great point. It, I don't know that it's an irony, but it's something I think about a lot, because with that reflection, that meditation on what you remember about school and almost like what is school for? And of course, we want to teach skills and the content that's important, core subject material that we think, you know, every kid should get, and exposure to the arts and fitness and all that. But it's like, what do you remember? I remember in middle school, the fun times, connecting with kids. I remember the crushes I had and the girls I would stare at in class instead of, like, you know, listening to the teacher.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, yeah. And those soft skills that I got taught as well. And the other interesting thing is I remember the lies I was taught in school too, or I should say, like, funny stories. Like, I had my favorite teacher all time, Mr. Freeman. He built great relationships with kids, and he was also hilarious. I took his AP US history class, and Rusty, I remember three things from that class. One, magic chalk, and that was a high-stakes strategy that where we got up, he asked one question, you had the magic chalk, and you wrote your answer to his question, and if you got it right, you got all the points on your U.S. history packet. And if you got it wrong, you got a zero. So I don't think that, you know, that's a great necessarily teaching strategy, but I remember it. It had an impact. The second thing I remember is that he told me that George Washington was buried alive. and when, you know, they excavated his coffin or whatever to build the memorial, they could see scratch marks in the wooden coffin. I'm pretty sure that that's not true, but I remember it, right?
Yeah.
And the third thing, I don't even remember what that was. So it doesn't matter, but it's like, it's those moments, right? Oh, I know. The third thing was we got to act out. We got to role play different U.S. scenarios, and I really enjoyed it because unlike the packets, it was taking that material and making it alive for me, right? And so we had debates, or we actually tried the cases that we were reading about, and it made that passive learning and reading, taking notes, into active learning because we were role-playing in class.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think the one middle school story for me is the coach. One of the coaches I talk about is Wiley Wise. He was my football coach. And I had to get up in front of the entire seventh grade and make a speech. And my speech was going to be a experiment where, I don't know if you remember this, when they had a glass milk bottles. You take a hard-boiled egg, you put a match at the bottom of the milk bottle, and then you put the hard-boiled egg on top, and because of the suction, it pulls the egg into the bottle. And for whatever reason, my bottle was wet. And so I was lighting matches and furiously trying to get it to work, and it wasn't working. And you hear the kids are starting to get nervous, and we're in this auditorium with 100 or 150 kids. And I start shaking and getting just horribly panicky, and kids are starting to laugh because they're uncomfortable. And that coach, Wiley Wise, walks in, and he sees that there's a problem and walks up onto the stage and somehow magically makes the bottle dry and gives me a new set of matches, and I'm able to make the thing work, and the kids all stood up and clapped afterwards. And what I remembered about that was that he had done that, but also that's my career now. I mean, I spend time talking to large groups of people, doing presentations and so forth, and any of the stage fright and all that stuff, in that moment, I can think that he really taught me that it was okay, and that stage fright, which, you know, most people are just horrified of trying to get up in front of their peers and talking. I think that's a critical life skill that I've used since then. And, you know, it's amazing, amazing to think about. Like you said, what are you trying to teach these kids how to do? I think hopefully we're trying to teach them how to find out what their strengths are and play off of that.
Absolutely. I love it. Teaching strengths and how to play off of that. Conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never-ending calls, there's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies hand-picked from the best podcasts. As an added bonus, this guide lists 5 resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free. Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com. You know, you were talking about the future of education too. I don't know that I've ever asked a guest this, but what do you predict or what do you see coming?
You know, I have a unique point of view, and I've said this before, because I think technology will allow us, you know, I say that, you know, I have 20 to 30,000 kids that watch my show every day. And I think of myself as kind of a counselor to, you know, a lot of those kids. And so as teachers and educators continue to think about, you know, how are we going to evolve as an institution, I think technology is going to play a big role. And I'm interested to see if other super teachers will come and begin to provide some curriculum support, so that curriculum becomes more about, you know, we have some super teachers that are able to teach lessons via internet or those kinds of things. And then we're spending more time as educators connecting with kids and getting that relational piece back. I'm kind of hopeful that technology will kind of take some of the pressure off of the classroom teacher in terms of the delivery of curriculum, and will allow us to spend more time in the relational development piece. Because if you think about it, I mean, so many of our kids are growing up with technology, and their quote unquote friends and their relationships oftentimes are virtual. And so school in the classroom is for a lot of us is one of the last bastions of face-to-face contact with other human beings. And I'm really hopeful that we'll take full advantage of that. And we will take time to develop some of those interpersonal skills. I mean, the vitriol in this country right now politically, and the horrible thing that happened the other day in Alexandria, Virginia, and the political dialogue getting to the point where people are simply not able to have conversations. It's incredible to see how angry people are. And just, I think we need as a country and as leaders of the next generation to realize that, man, we have a lot of responsibility to make sure that this democracy continues and that conversation becomes the most important thing, instead of just arguing and being angry all the time and people not being able to communicate because they have different ideas. I think that worries me as much as anything. As I sit here and look at the current environment, I worry that we've been split right down the middle, and that people are unable to hear different points of view and understand different points of view, maybe not accept them by any stretch of the imagination, but to not allow it to be something that divides our country. I mean, I worry about that. And as a father of 2 young children, I worry about that. And you know, this past election cycle was probably one of the most uncomfortable periods of my life as an American, was watching just the whole process. The whole process was just overwhelming. There was so much negativity, and it was just overwhelming. And I don't know. I think as educators, I hope that we see that part of our responsibility, and realizing that developing the type of person who can live and actively participate in a democracy is as much of our job as it is to teach them how to make money and be able to go out and earn, so that they can join the myriad of people who are out there buying things. I don't think that, I'm not a materialist, and I certainly don't think that material wealth and those kinds of things are the be-all end-all at the end of the day. I hope we're taking it more seriously than just trying to make sure they have a career and that they can participate in the economic system of capitalism. I also feel that they need to participate in the political system of democracy.
Yeah, those are good points. I appreciate that perspective. Thank you. Rusty, what has been your worst leadership mistake, and what have you learned from it?
Not delegating. I had an opportunity to run, and my wife and I play Ultimate Frisbee, and I had a chance to run the World Championships in Italy in 2014, and we were the volunteer coordinators responsible for 300 volunteers that were the ones who basically ran the tournament behind the scenes and did all the scorekeeping and those kinds of things. And I had done a lot of tournaments before, and the group size of the volunteers was in the 60s to 70 range. And that was fine. I could handle that. But this group was too big, and we had some really serious problems with the weather, with the infrastructure of the camps where the players were staying. And as things got crazy, I just stopped delegating and stopped asking for help. And I started taking all the responsibility on myself. And it was, we got through it, and the champion was crowned, and nothing terrible happened. But I do think of that as an incredible sense of regret that I wasn't able to get out of my own way and realize that it was more important to ask for help and get more people involved than it was for me to be the leader and to for everybody to know that I was in charge. I think I got my ego got in the way, and I wasn't able to do that. I had a similar experience coaching. I remember yelling at a group of kids on the basketball court, and I had this epiphany in the moment that I wasn't actually trying to coach my kids. I was in fact trying to tell the parents in the stands how smart I was. So I wanted them to hear me say things like, we've gone over this before, we've talked about it, and so I was thinking about that part of leadership where it's more about me than it is about them. And going back to what I said about being assertive or discipline versus punishment, getting out of my own way and not allowing my ego to be my leader are mistakes that I constantly have to work on.
Yeah. Thank you for your transparency and vulnerability in that statement and answer. I really appreciate it. And it's something I've been thinking deeply about right now because, recording in June, I've listened to the audiobook, Ego is the Enemy. Now I'm reading it in the mastermind I'm participating in. So I went from personal to mastermind participation. And in the masterminds I lead, we're going to be reading Ego is the Enemy for July and August. So for all the listeners, and I actually mentioned it in the last episode of 115, this is 116. Check out that book, Ego is the Enemy, if you want to explore that topic and think about how you may address it if you have that issue as well. I know I do. So in different ways it manifests. One, as a school leader, we have a nice salary. And I like that way too much. That's a problem for me. And it's ego driven, like my worth is somehow connected to how much I earn, which is totally a lie. And it's completely egotistical. And I don't like it. And then another thing, too, with having the podcast or a strong social media presence. Right. I really like when I get followers and downloads and retweets and likes. And I pay attention to that, Rusty, way too much. Why? That's ego driven. And it doesn't help that those things are absolutely expertly designed to vie for my attention and feed my ego. But I need to somehow battle that. And so I'm working through it. That's my long way of saying I'm just very curious, Rusty, based on what you shared there. If you want to share, what have you done then to work on that? Once you noticed it, right? Hey, I want the parents to realize how smart. I'm the best middle school coach in the world, right? Like, how do you address that as a leader?
I think one of the things that I feel as an educator, but as a human being in general, but also as an educator, is the idea of spending time in silence and really being introspective about, yourself and asking yourself some of those questions. I mean, we talk to kids all the time about being lifelong learners. And as an educator, I think it's really, really important that we spend some time in silence, whether on a daily basis or simply turning off the radio in the car on the way home and spending a little bit of time thinking about our day and how it went. And I think by doing that, by getting away from some of that noise that you're talking about, and you're doing so much good stuff. You have 8,000 downloads, and you're affecting leaders. And a lot of what you're doing, you deserve to be paid, and you also deserve to feel good about what you're doing. And that's not always just your ego. And I think it's important that we realize that some of that is ourselves being proud of ourselves or wanting to be. And appreciating what we're accomplishing. And at the same time, the ability to be quiet, the ability to be introspective. And, this is you know, when we have breaks from school and so forth, to get away a little bit and to take some time. Writing has always helped me. I used to journal, I think, on a daily basis, and I don't do it as much anymore. Now that I have two little kids, I think that has my ego has gone out the door. Now I know that they're the focus of my world, and I did enough. I got married and had kids late in life. I'm 54 years old, and I got married 3 years ago, and I've had two kids in that period of time. So I think I did enough navel gazing for, you know, 20 years of thinking about who I was and what I was doing. And now that I've got these two beautiful little things that are so much more, well, three incredible things in my life that are so much more important than me, that helps me to stay grounded. But I do think silence is an important component. I really do. I think the noise is so loud, and the connection to the world is so invasive, that unless we're willing to turn things off and get away for a while and think about who we are and what and who we want to be, then it becomes easy to get stuck in old habits.
Yeah, silence is key. I really appreciate that. And even as a podcast content creator, and in no way, guys, you still need to listen to the show. But even I, at times, like, I consume so much content, audiobooks, podcasts, like nuts. Even I will turn off that and make sure there's no radio on, and sometimes just have times of silence at home or in the car to decompress and explore what's going on within myself and deal with that as well. So, Rusty, we're kind of winding down. So these are some quick fire questions with quick responses, and then a big question for you at the end. What's one book every principal should read right now, and why?
Wow. The growth mindset, I think I'm kind of blanking on, Carol Dweck. Okay. Yep. Growth Mindset by Carol Dweck. I think, you know, that book is a lot more, it's deeper than people think it is. And I think it has to do with the way that we interact with kids. I talked earlier about human being versus human doing, and the idea of seeing a kid with a haircut. And instead of saying something like, "Hey, I really like your haircut," you say something like, "I noticed you got a new haircut," because there's a judgment aspect to "I like your haircut" that can also feed into "I don't like your haircut." And so the growth mindset, really, in the way that we communicate with our students, the way we communicate with our teachers, that book has a lot of information in there, and it's a really good read.
Yeah, I love that one too. So that's been mentioned on the show three times, episodes 45, 49, and now 116. So listeners, if you have not checked out Mindset, that is a game-changing book. Another thing that you might not realize, and I hope this is still true, Carol Dweck's a researcher at Stanford, and this mindset work she's doing, she has a program that is free to schools that helps teach mindset, and I guess it measures how it impacts assessment and success in school. So, you know, just research Stanford, Carol Dweck as well, and reach out. But you can partner up and get some really great interventions started at your school too.
That's awesome.
So, Rusty, I know you've got the three great additions to your life recently, but what do you do for fun?
It's my kids. I mean, that's pretty much it. You know, I used to have before I got married, Jake was my dog. I had Jake for 13 wonderful years, and I hiked. I think the mountains of Northern California were the place that I went to do my thing. And Jake and I hiked, I don't even know how many thousands of miles over that period of time that we were together. So that was incredibly fun for me. And I still enjoy hiking when I get an opportunity. Delaware doesn't have the mountains. We moved to Delaware. My wife's Portuguese, and we wanted to be closer to a direct flight to Lisbon to see her parents, who she's an only child as well. So we moved from California, and that was really tough for me. But, my two kids, that's what I do for fun. It's just be around them, be around their energy, and connect, everything that I say in my videos and when I'm talking to teachers and so forth. Now I have my own kids, and so it changes the way you think about all of it.
If you could be automatically good at something, what would it be, Rusty?
Self-control. I don't always think of myself as being someone who has incredible self-control, and you know, anger management, self-control. These were all kinds of issues that these teachers and coaches worked with me on and things that I struggled with. And I get better at them, but I would love to kind of have that sort of ability to not be quick-tempered. And especially with my kids. My son, Charlie, is the 2-year-old, and the first word that he has said, unfortunately, is a curse word. And I think it had to do with me. When I drop something or whatever, I'll react very quickly and say something that I'm not that proud of. And that was his first word in English. He's learning English and Portuguese, and his first word in English was a curse word. So I had to say to myself, you need to stop doing that when you make a mistake or whatever. And it's so in your face and so forth when you hear your son say something like that in perfect English too, which is unfortunate, but he can say it in perfect English.
Hmm. What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for a day?
Yeah, I go back to the Rose Throckelt thing, to thine own self be true, or know yourself. I mean, I think for me, I've that has been a mantra of mine ever since I was 18 years old or 17 years old in her classroom. And just the thought about on my show every day, I call kids little diamonds. And when I go to visit them, they ask me why. And I say, because a diamond is created under a tremendous amount of force, and dealing with that pressure over a long period of time turns something that's very common, cold, into something incredibly unique and strong, which is a diamond. And I do believe that each of us have skills and talents that can help us and can get us, help us add a sentence to the dialogue, is something I like to tell kids, to be able to leave something behind. And whether you're a school principal or an administrator, or you're a banker or a lawyer, it doesn't matter what it is, but there is probably something that you're going to be good at. LeBron James is a great basketball player, but LeBron James is a physical freak. I mean, for him to have wanted to be a jockey would have been kind of a waste of talent, I think. So he had to kind of dance with the girl that brung him. And so know yourself, to thine own self be true. I would like that to be part of what schools talk about.
Well, Rusty, I'm proud of you. You made it. You're at the last question of the show. Thank you for being such an incredible guest. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top 3 priorities?
The first thing, it would obviously be the people around me. I mean, my crew, my team. I talked about running those professional Frisbee events, or the international Frisbee events. When I have a good group of leaders with me and I have my volunteers and I are on the same page, it is one of the truly most inspiring experiences to go build a community for a week or 2 weeks and play some really high level athletics and just to watch that all come together and to support each other and to trust each other. That team of people around me is going to be my number one priority. And how they treat each other as well. Unfortunately, one of the things that I see is that oftentimes the most dysfunctional place in the school is the teacher's lounge. And we do oftentimes have a lot of things happening in the teacher's lounge that need to be addressed. So building that team of teachers who not only work well with me, but also trust and support each other would be number one. Encouraging them to teach to their behavioral expectations first. We would spend the first week of every year working on our rules and expectations. We would have daily check-ins. We would have morning meetings. I don't care what grade it was, K-12. A lot of high school teachers don't think that kids that are older really want to have an opportunity to talk or do these kinds of things. But I feel that the opposite is true. We would have a morning meeting. We would have 3 to 4 or 5 minutes every day where we connected with each other in the classroom. Then I would involve the students in not only in the rules and expectations, but also in the learning process. I would like there to be an open conversation about where we're going and project-based learning and some of the new things. I don't want the pendulum to swing too far. Obviously, they have their skills that they have to learn, but in involving them in the process would be a big part of it as well.
Rusty, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
parting words of advice, I think the best advice I can give you is don't assume that they know how to behave, the students, and don't assume that teachers know how to lead, that classroom management, behavior management is something that comes intrinsically either to your staff or to your students. And how they get a hold of me, rusty@schooltoolstv.com. You can look up School Tools TV. It's School Tools with an S, TV as in television.com. And you can always contact me through the website. Or if you're listening to this podcast and you contact me and tell me that you heard about the show, I'd be happy to give you a free subscription for the rest of the remainder of this year if you'd like to use it for yourself or for your team to try it out for a year. I'll be happy to set them up. So if you contact me and tell me you heard about me on Daniel's podcast, I'll be happy to set you up some free accounts to use in your school.
What? Better Leaders, did you hear that? I did not know Rusty was going to be so generous. But if you go to the School Tools TV website or email Rusty, and again, all those links will be there for you in the show notes. Just let him know that you heard about School Tools TV from the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, and he's going to hook you up with a free account for the remainder of the year. Thank you. Thank you, Rusty.
My pleasure, man. Getting this stuff out is really critical. Like you said, you're not a measure of how much money you make. You're a measure of what kind of impact you're having. So I'm more than happy to share this stuff.
Well, that's a great note to end on. And Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Rusty. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com. Type Rusty in the search bar and the show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Rusty, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you, Daniel. Have a great day.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.